Mr. Palmer, Reel 6, talking about your period at Brandsbeth when you were forming, well, part of an intelligence section at the depot, a training intelligence section, really, where you were both being trained and training, I think, from the sound of it. Any other aspects? I think you've got a few other small aspects of your time there that you recall.
Yes. I mentioned that we married. And we got 10 days leave, that was about the usual thing, and we took our honeymoon in Scotland. But also, of course, during that time, you tried to get away from the depot as much as you possibly could. Army life could be very dull. Unless you were somehow able to find other occupations that could be perhaps more exciting, like trying to make your own way back without a pass to Newcastle. And it went on for quite a while, and then the Red Caps, of course, sat on that. And you then had to wait for an official weekend pass, which you got once a month. 10 days leave, I think, was just once every 6 months or once a year. Never mind, you did get a longer break anyway. So I applied to have an interview again with the main army intelligence, not just what was attached to the main brigade, but I had to go on a course of speaking a little bit of French, not a course, but to have an interview in which they checked. But I didn't follow that one up.
Did you pass?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know whether I ever heard any results, but at least the point was that I would be recommended for an interview by the colonel, presumably. But our officer was a kind of fellow who would do his best for me. He was one of these people, by the way, decided the way of writing the daily reports for the mess. Or the ordinary daily orders should be, for instance, written in much better English. And so he had a course of officers and men who had dealt with these things to point out to them how you could make it much shorter, much briefer, and much more to the point if you altered the English. And after all, we're soldiers, and we have to do things quickly. We'd better also make sure that we're precise about the details. And also this thing, you know, the round thing about sending reinforcements and sending reinforcements. How if you pass a message down verbally, how this can be altered. So that was, again, of course, was an important point for the intelligence section, because when you had to make reports, as I had to personally, and later on, you had to be reasonably on top of the job. Better than I am nowadays, I'm hesitating a lot. I think that we can say that when now go on to the question of moving down.
How did he practice you in passing on verbal reports to avoid the garbling?
Or? Oh, well, yes, you did. Have a little bit of practice of passing messages over the telephone, and then it would come round in a circle. And this could be done as part of your training with the ordinary troops and the NCOs and so on, to show them, for instance, how you couldn't always have telephones or all the rest of it. Very often it had to be a verbal message sent back by a runner.
And what was were there any methods to avoid messages being garbled? I mean, how were you to avoid it?
Well, you had to learn to speak a little more clearly. and that could, with some people, could be difficult.
Would you also make a practice of repeating the message back to the person who gave it to check you got it right?
Yes, if you had time. If you had time. It's all very well if you've been pounded with artillery and doing that. Yes. Yes, so...
And what happened to Hastert? Because I think...
I said that he died. He had a military funeral. I remember I was there.
Do you remember why he died? Because there was talk he committed suicide. Do you remember any of the circumstances?
Yeah, there was talk about it, but...
You don't know?
I don't know. I didn't particularly want to know either.
So the move then, in March 1942 then?
Yes.
You joined the 16th
of...
1943. No, 1942.
Yes. 1942.
You joined the 16th Battalion there, right. How did you come to get posted there, or was it just a normal posting?
Oh, well, I wasn't personally posted. I went down as a reinforcement.
With a draft? That was with a draft, then?
That was with a draft, yes.
And when you joined them at Rye... What did you join as an... Were you there as an intelligence NCO or man?
Yes.
So you went straight in?
Immediately, yes. And also, interestingly enough, one of the persons who had trained with me at Bransford had been able to get posted, the posting there, as the sergeant of the section, Fenwick.
Sorry?
Sergeant Fenwick.
Fenwick?
I remember, yes.
And who were the rest of the personnel? Do you remember any of them from your new attendance?
The personnel were a mixed bag with one from Birmingham, three from the Bradford area, and when I joined them, I can't tell you exactly where they all came from, but there was definitely one from Birmingham and three.
Do you remember any of their names?
Yes. First of all, there was one called Tetley. I think he's still alive, but he was a little fellow. He was practically quite good with the map and the rest of it, and he came from the Bradford area. There was a fellow called Billington, who was quite an educated fellow, and certainly was a very, very fluent French and German speaker. The other one was... Anyway, as far as the names of them are concerned, it's just the old Jack Fernley, that's right.
Fernley.
Jack Fernley is now dead, but I've kept in touch with him for through the years. While he was also, his languages weren't too bad either. Now,
what about the officer?
The officer there. The one that we had, he was a little Jewish gentleman. Again, name for the moment escapes me. I told you yesterday I was going to have problems with
Don't worry, it's 50 years ago.
And he was the intelligence officer for a while when I was there. I don't really think he liked it. I think he felt he was rather out of things. We did quite the usual sort of training with him, reading maps by night, making sure we were able to read a map by night, using all the necessary protectives to do it. All the usual training, and we each had bicycles there. So that not only on going out on certain duties, we used to use the bicycle for recreation as well. And I can remember there, I used to cycle through to my brother-in-law in Lewis, which is quite a way, in uniform, carrying my change of clothing on the side. And anyway, that was.
And what were your initial impressions of the 16th Battalion? You'd been in the depot a long while, but you'd been with the 8th, the Territorials. What did you think of the sort of quality of the materials in the 16th? Well, the men in the 16th.
The men in the 16th? Well, as I said before, they were not all from Durham. They had big interests because they started off in Scotland, they moved down to the Midlands. They had there become, I think, part of the 46th Division. And then they moved down to Kent and Sussex and various places down there. So that Ryde was the last of the places before they moved to Winchelsea to prepare to go abroad. They were not in Winchelsea for very long, but they were in Ryde for over 6 months. My wife used to visit me down there. In fact, we weren't supposed to be, but there were a lot of them who had their wives, their officers, and men, you know. And provided that you were always on duty, you were always there on time, nothing would be said about it. It would be known, but it would be not to worry about. In fact,
while you were there, quite a few of the companies went through a sort of modified battle school training, you know, quite vigorous obstacle courses and things. Would you at intelligence section, would you be put through that as well?
Yes.
What do you remember of it?
Don't remember anything of it. And we also fired, of course, and went to Hyde and fired on the ranges and carried on the rest.
What about the air raids? Because there were quite a few German air raids on Rye while you were there. Yes. Do you remember them?
Yes, I remember watching one. We were up the hill, stationed up the hill. Do you know Rye at all? And these two planes came over, and we said, oh, that's enough, it'll be ours. And of course, we looked again. I mean, the intelligence section, all right, we were supposed to be over 10 aircraft, and they went down, not up here, and you were taught to look at them. That way on, and they're not flying towards you, they're flying across the path, and suddenly, boom, you see, machines on, and they hit the cinema. And it was early afternoon, and that cinema used to open in the afternoon, you know. And the only person who was killed was the attendant there, who'd gone to open it up, and it wasn't. They could have been full of troops. Whether the Germans knew that, I often suspect they did. I think that they knew a lot more than they were credited for knowing.
Were you actually under any bombing, as opposed to watching it? I mean, did any bombs land close to you at that time?
No, one did land, for instance, when I was with the 8th Durham down in Morecambe Lake. We were having a scheme, and this plane came low overhead, just about 100 yards away, and dropped. I mean, it wasn't anything very heavy. I think it was just dropping its load to get away. And it hit the CO's car, and his driver was killed. As far as Rye is concerned, that's the only incident that I can remember. We did not get much in the way. Rye didn't get much in the way of raids. Not while the 16th was there, or while I was there with them.
Now, you left in December, you know, late December. What about the preparations for going overseas? I mean, do you recall that? How the battalion got ready for overseas service?
Well, I think I mentioned to you early on, and you didn't record it, about being involved with schemes with the Canadians before Dieppe.
Tell us about that.
Because a jet raid took place while we were there, and we had to attack a hill upon which the Canadians, they were defending this, and the idea was that we were to take the hill where they were to keep us out, and they were, in other words, not acting as the attackers but as the defenders, to find out what the problems of the defenders would be as far as an approaching enemy would be concerned. And we were marching up there in order to be gone along the valley, and it was at night time, and we were travelling up towards this hill, and we knew exactly where their brain gun carriers were, because they were talking and shouting and what else. And I thought, man, if you were preparing, as we knew then, to go across the year, you were going to have a tight time on it.
So your impression was that their discipline was poor.
Was not as good as it might have been, perhaps. But mind you, I don't want to pass anything against the Canadians. It's like everything else. When you first go into the real thing, you can so easily make a mistake. You can make a mistake by perhaps being too brave, or you can make a mistake by being too much the other way.
Now, so the preparations, how did you get the battalion get ready to go overseas?
Well, we did all the various kinds of lots of schemes. We did all around Sussex. In connection, big schemes with full divisions and corps schemes and so on. And always, we didn't wear necessarily used, sometimes we were used, but we were always there in reserve in case we needed. I think that one of the points was to be able to, where the transport was concerned, to know, for instance, how you can keep in contact with your troops and get supplies to them when they took up certain positions, to know how near you could take the transport, what arrangements were made. And quite obviously, this was quite a subtle business, depending entirely upon how close the enemy might be, how close the countryside would be in the way of giving cover. Not, of course, generally knowing how far you could go at night to take the transport without being heard. You had your dipped headlights, of course, but you could still be heard if you went too near. Which meant as well that if you were carrying troops, I mean, this is one of the things that you had to practice, was getting on and off lorries. So that you could move and march into the positions you held and be able to do this silently enough not to bring down enemy fire on you, or to tell the enemy that this change was taking place. Because if they knew that, there could be terrible havoc.
So that's the exercise. What about getting equipment and your G1098, you know, getting stores and everything ready for overseas? What sort of preparations were going on at battalion headquarters for that? Or would you not see any of that?
I wouldn't see any of it.
Did you get any embarkation leave?
Yes. We were given embarkation leave. I can't tell you whether it was... I can't remember whether it was right. Or whether it was at Winchelsea, because we moved to Winchelsea, we were there for about a month or so. And my wife, who was a being of life, found somewhere also in Winchelsea. But the funny thing was that the place where she was staying, the people there knew exactly where the battalion was going.
But what
we didn't, not if. not necessarily then. All we knew is we were preparing to go overseas.
So these people told you that you were going to North Africa?
Well, they had an idea we were going to North Africa.
Do you think they knew or they just guessed?
It could have been a guess. Yes, it could have been a guess.
How did you feel about being parted from your wife after not long?
Yes, that was a bit, but of course that was something that belonged to a lot of the troops. I mean, they weren't all youngsters, they weren't all people, they met the son of married people. They all had to make the necessary sacrifice. And ironically enough, I never had to leave home until I was the mob. From the day I left until 3 years afterwards. And yet nowadays, after the Gulf War and the rest of it, tremendous, the missing leaves and missing this and missing the other. Either the war is more intense, or the other way around.
Now, finally, in December, you moved up to Liverpool for embarkation.
Yes.
What do you remember of the whole trip and setting off?
Well, travel by night, of course, and it was all done overnight. There were no stops made, and we went straight to the docks. And straight on board ship in the early hours of the morning, and it was Christmas Day, and we never saw anything in the way of Christmas food. We were on HMS Staffordshire.
SS. It wasn't a warship, was it? It was
no.
A troop ship, yeah.
No, it was a troop ship.
Now, what was your accommodation like on the troop ship?
Oh, the big deck. Plenty of rowing about the sea. Hammocks, of course, we had.
How did you get on with them?
Well, not too well. We'd had used hammocks before. I mean, I used a hammock before the green VR was there, so I didn't like it.
Why not?
Why not? Because it didn't strike me as being all that comfortable. I can quite see on the deck it would be far better being in our hammock. We would be less likely to be seasick, but not entirely. And we were, of course, seasick. You're down smelly, down below decks. And in the end, I went up an enormous amount on deck and stood up there. And I looked out and saw, of course, the whole of the support fleet. But we did get one or two warnings.
Submarine warnings?
Yes. And they were about, and we heard one or two distant rumbles, but there was no panic, no nothing. We just carried on, and I don't think any of the convoy was here.
Was there much to do on board ship?
No. Nothing, you just had to make up your own time. Sensibly, you took with you. I had a little pocket chess, for instance. Not that I necessarily played it, but people did. They would use it, a little pocket chess. And you took packs of cards with you. And you also found ways without anything at all to have some kind of amusement. But we were, as I say, we were on, I don't quite know how long we were on board. Would it be 5 days, wasn't it? No, not so much as that.
Quite a while. I think you got there on...
Because we moved right out and then came back again.
I think it says 10 days, actually. 3rd of January,
43. That's a long time.
When you got to, you were going to Algiers.
Yes.
What were your impressions as you approached land of what you could see? You'd never been abroad. Had you been abroad before?
No. I haven't been abroad before. Oh, it was quite exciting, you know. I mean, obviously, when you're moving in, and seeing things to be calm, it's a different matter altogether. But of course, it always takes a long time to disembark. And then we were tired. We hadn't really had much sleep, you know. We were tired, and we had a march. We had to go through Maison Carrière. I think that was the name of the place.
Was that a? I mean, that's a tough march. How did you feel?
Very tired, but we managed it. And you always, you see, if you're marching along like that, you carry all your equipment with you, everything, you've got your packs. They take your kit bags. Now, they were transported on those, but if I remember rightly, we had everything else, because we've got to find somewhere to sleep.
What were your impressions as you passed through? What did you think of Algiers and then the Arabs?
Honestly, as far as I was concerned, they were a whole lot of dirt.
Is that what most people thought then?
I think so, yes. I think that was probably the impression. But there again, you had to make the best of it. And I can remember we went into a little sort of room and they were drinking from the venue. And we had some of this stuff and I felt ill after that. I never touched it once since. It's the first time I've felt sick, but you were thirsty, you know, and you wanted something to drink. They didn't have anything to offer, and I can't remember what the food or grub or anything else was like there. I think it was pretty awful. And I think I sometimes wonder whether it's deliberate, because they don't want to make you feel too comfortable, so that when you get up in the line, you think things are a lot better than they were before you got there.
Well, you were at Maison Carrière or Eucalyptus Camp, I think. It's Maison Carrière anyway.
Yes.
And you were there about a week doing a bit of fitness training, according to, you know, marching and and lectures on. Do you remember anything about your time?
I don't remember a thing about it.
And then you were taken up right up the line, a long journey up the coast road. Do you remember that?
Not really, no.
Because it's a long journey up to Sedgemoor.
I don't remember it. No.
And then you were going to the Sedgemoor Green Hill area.
Yes, right. Yes.
What do you remember of arriving in the battle? That's the battle zone over there.
That's the battle zone. Well, we moved up as far as we could on transport and then marched the rest of the way up. But we had to wait for we were replacing the bus. And this was my first experience, really. Frontline feelings. We were there, quiet, expectant, worried about what we were. And here these troops came out. No, they weren't dragging their way out. But the looks on their faces, they were staring-eyed. You know what I mean? They didn't look at us. They didn't. Obviously, they told not to speak. No one nodded. They just went by. They obviously had a fairly rough time of it. So we were moved in, and almost immediately after that, the following day, we were out on observation post. Now, we were